Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. When I say we got a great Monday show, I am not kidding. We got a great Monday show, and it continues with Jason Evert this hour. Jason Evert, I personally think one of the finest representatives of the fullness of the gospel, of the liberating power of the of relationship with the person of Jesus Christ and all of that. And you can find his work at chastity.com and among and other places. You may have read his books. This hour is for you if maybe you have issues that you would like to talk about regarding chastity, questions about what it is or why the church teaches it and promotes it. Or maybe you'd like to help, you know, like some help raising chaste kids or teens or helping your adult children or whatever it is. If you have questions related to chastity, Jason is the guy to talk to. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Jason Evert, thank you so much for being here with us.
No, it's good to be back with you.
One of the most important topics of our time, and you've given your whole life to it. Let me ask you this. I don't know how many years we've been in the sexual revolution now. How's it going? How's all that going?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. When was it Dr. Phil used to ask the guest, so how's that working for you?
Yeah, right. Right. But there are signs of young people challenging the lies that have been fed to them, of taking up a different manner of living.
Yeah, and I would say in terms of sexuality is something we do, and sexuality is who we are, I think we're seeing a pivot. The rates of teen sexual activity have actually been going down for about 30 years straight. The Centers for Disease Control releases the figures on that. It's just been a consistent decline for 30-plus years. A lot of people don't know that if all you're looking at is the mainstream media and what they're telling us kids are up to. But rates of abstinence continue to rise, and that sexuality is something we do, but then also sexuality is who we are, male and female. I think we're all starting to see the pendulum kind of starting to swing back towards reality. You're having people like Riley Gaines speak up, and you know, and just athletes stand up at the podium and say, no, I'm not gonna compete against a boy in a women's sport. I'm not going to do this. And so more people kind of finding their voice and regaining a sense of the true north and reality of who God created us to be, male and female. So unfortunately, I think the pendulum has swung so far. And one end, it's going to kind of come back like a wrecking ball in terms of all the damage that will be caused at the end of the day by how far we've become detached from the reality of God made us to be. So, but in the end, the truth wins, so we can all be at peace.
888-318-7884. Your questions on chastity, sexuality from a Catholic point of view and also from the point of view of being a reasonable person. Those are not two different things, by the way. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. You've been helping people for a long time now in this field. Are the questions different now than they were, say, 20 years ago?
They are, and I think the biggest game changer has been the phone, because you know, 25 years ago, if you're struggling with pornography or something like that, you could kind of throw it away and it'd be gone. But now you've got parents handing their 14-year-old boy a smartphone with no filters on it, and then you wonder why he's, you know, neck deep into some of these addictions by the time he's 15 and a half years old. And so questions on, you know, how do I battle the temptations when my parents are giving me the phone and there's no filter there? I've got girls telling me like, yeah, my mom's the one who buys me all these outfits. So, you know, is it really that bad to be wearing this stuff, even though I think it is kind of a little bit immodest? So sometimes the pressure from the parents in that regard, and then just struggles from the kids. I met a girl just a couple of weeks ago at a high school when she was a six-year-old girl. She had suffered a lot of abuse in a very unfortunate way and decided, well, if I transition to a male identity and presentation, then I'm not going to receive that kind of attention from guys and feel unsafe in my own body. So she transitioned to a male identity. And then horribly, she was abused even worse as a boy by a man. And then she decided, okay, I'm not safe presenting as any particular sexuality. And now she's identifying as non-binary. And so she came up to me after the assembly and she started laughing and crying at the same time, that she had this sense of relief that God loved her and saw her, but then this sorrow and everything that she had been through. And I just sat there for about an hour and we talked, and it was really a trauma response of her gender dysphoria, that she was trying to find a place in the world that she was safe dissociating from her own body and sexuality. Like, this stuff was not on the radar, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It really wasn't. I mean, you had some kids wrestling with gender dysphoria, but if they were hating their body, they would deal with that with like an eating disorder sometimes, or sometimes self-harm. But this type of the next level, where it's the doctors facilitating the self-harm with the puberty blockers, the cross-sex hormones, the surgeries, this stuff I didn't really see coming. And then it just kind of hit us like a train. And now we're kind of dealing with the wreckage, unfortunately.
The number is 888-318-7884. I'm actually kind of... puts my heart at ease a little bit that you say you didn't see it coming, because I have had some sense of maybe guilt of like, man, if we could have said more 10 years ago, we could have, but I didn't see it at all. I didn't think the next thing was going to be girls, the abandonment of the idea of a girl or a boy.
Yeah, no, and the dominoes have fallen in a very specific order, you know, in terms of the first one being contraception. That was the first big domino, in my opinion, that fell over. That paved the way for the sexual revolution, which then required, in a sense, abortion. Because, well, wait a minute, you told me I'd be safe if I did this. It didn't work out. Now, if, you know, pregnancy is the problem, you know, and contraception was like the vaccine, then I think abortion must be the cure to this problem of a child. And so it kind of already tilted us in this anti-family mentality. And then the next domino to fall off the part of the sexual revolution would be same-sex marriage. Because if bodies are, in a sense, unimportant and meaningless in the bedroom, then why should they be meaningful outside of the bedroom?
Oh, yeah.
And then we see the gender piece fall. So where it went from contraception to promiscuity to abortion to same-sex marriage to gender ideology, there's a very logical reason why the dominoes fell in that order, and that people weren't really questioning what it means to be male and female 50, 60 years ago when man and woman constituted a marriage. And once these dominoes fallen, you know, we have the chaos, you know, that we're going through right now. But I think, as I said in the beginning, we need to be at peace. You know, truth will win out in the end. The sorrow is how much suffering will need to take place, especially in young people that are 15-year-old kids now, girls going through menopausal symptoms before they have their driver's license because of how many drugs have already been given to them to help them not go through the wrong puberty. So it's just, you know, as a husband and a father, it's just heartbreaking to see kids go through this stuff. But we got to remember, our hope is in God, and he wins in the end.
He does indeed. 888-318-7884. But you do just feel like you want to protect people who are in their teens and 20s now, some older than that, but mostly in that vulnerable age group, from doing permanent damage to themselves. You feel like the wave will pass. But I know, I can think of two sets of parents right now who are just struggling with helping children just get through this without doing permanent harm to themselves. That's all these parents want, is get through it.
Yeah.
They're not rejecting the child. They're not mad at the child. They just want make it past this vulnerable age without surgery and all these other things that they do.
Yeah, and sometimes I've found some parents where the only answer they've found is like get a one-way ticket out of California or Oregon or Washington,
yeah,
and land the family in a place that's a little bit more grounded. And so some families have gone to that extreme to rescue their kids. I mean, if the kids are in the public school system, there is a social contagion element behind all of this. If we're not acknowledging the reality of that, you know, we've got our head in the sand. That is a piece of the puzzle. Now, sometimes it's not necessary to pluck the kid out of his school entirely and move the whole family, but sometimes that's a step families have found that works. But I think it's important for parents to realize that don't beat yourself up because this is happening in your family. I know so many good families. I spoke at the Eucharistic Congress on gender, and there was a line hours long after the talk of parents coming to me of like, yeah, my, you know, kid, yeah, granted, when he was a teen, he didn't fit in real well, but then he went off to college and he came back non-binary, and he showed up after a semester at the university, and now he says his pronouns are they, them. Like, what did I do wrong? It's like, don't beat yourself up. There's the mystery of free will, because the best parent in the universe is the Heavenly Father. And now you look at how messed up all of his kids are down here. You know, it's not because he's a defective dad. His kids have free will. Ours do too. And God picked you as the parent of that child because he knew you'd never give up an interceding for the child. And so don't give up hope. Don't beat yourself up. Just patiently love that child through all of this.
You know, Jason, I would add to that, and I wonder what you would think about this, that parents who don't have this problem with their child should be not in any way judgmental of parents who do. I think there's sometimes this Catholic, I don't know, we do this judging thing of how many kids other people have and how those kids are turning out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you see, you know, at Mother's Day at Mass, you know, stand up if you're a mother, let's celebrate Mother's Day. And then, you know, some people might look around like, you know, that couple's been married for 5 years and they don't have any kids. They must be contracepting. It's like, no, actually, they could be really carrying an unbelievably heavy cross of infertility. And you have no clue how hard they've tried and how many miscarriages they've suffered and the progesterone injections. Like, you have no idea. And so it's so important that we just suspend all judgment. You have no idea where this stuff is coming from. And so just do your best to, and a lot of people in the Catholic Church don't even realize that there could be people sitting next to you in the pew who wrestle with gender dysphoria, who look as a man totally masculine. And you'd think, oh, he doesn't wrestle with it all. But sometimes men hyper present as masculine who do wrestle with gender dysphoria and in secret. And it's something that they're wrestling with behind closed doors. And if you're joking around, making fun of the trannies and this and that, that you have no idea how much damage you could be doing to these individuals. So we've just got to realize it's not a matter of they're outside of the church. They're already in the faith community and they're wrestling with their own faith of God. Like, why am I like this? Do you love me? Do I have to change for you to love me? And if they don't receive and feel love in the community of the church, they are going to beeline it out of there and find a community of people who will affirm any decision they want, even if it's not in the end in their best interest in this life or the life to come.
Our guest is Jason Evert, one of the great voices of sanity, especially on issues around human sexuality. You are welcome to call with your questions. I'm going to take a quick break. The number is 888-318-7884.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN Global Catholic Network is the largest religious media network in the world. 11 global TV channels, English and Spanish radio networks with over 500 AM and FM radio affiliates, one of the largest Catholic websites in the world, dozens of podcasts every week, social media, electronic and print news services, and EWTN publishing. EWTN is the global Catholic network. For more about EWTN, visit EWTN.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jason Evert is our guest, and you know Jason from his talks and his books and his media appearances, probably from chastity.com, or at least you know that it's there. If you have questions about chastity, if you have questions about married life, singled life, whatever it is, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. I'm going to go to Anthony in Long Island, New York to start. Anthony watching on YouTube. Welcome, Anthony. Go ahead with your question for Jason.
Hey, thanks for taking my question. So I just wanted to ask a general question about advice for someone who's been living a chaste life for a couple of months since fully converting back to the Catholic faith, daily communion and all that, but still dealing with the attachment of sin, still dealing with the attachment on the heart to previous relationships before the conversion.
Yeah, good question. The detachment to sin. I know, Cy, that you've completely finished that part of your life, right? So you're totally detached from.
I appreciate
any
you noticing,
I,
Jason.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you. Kind of had a glow about you.
Yeah,
right. I bring this to Jess because this is going to be something that's going to be a part of your life one way or the next until we're dead. A lot of people think if I get really, really holy, the temptations are going to go away, and that's a sign of how much I'm growing in holiness. I had a bishop on my podcast a while back, Bishop Eric Varden. This guy is a bishop in Norway, and he's a monk. And he shared this awesome story of the early church fathers. There was a bishop... an abbot, it was, of a monastery out in the early church fathers in the desert. And at that monastery was a young monk who struggled with a lot of temptations, like really bad, consistent temptations of a sexual nature. And the young monk finally came to the elderly monk and said, "This is what's going on in my interior life, and it's just so consistent and persistent and difficult." And the elderly monk was a bit of a prude, and he was just aghast that he would even struggle with these temptations in the flesh. And he just shamed the young monk of like, "Oh, you know, this is just proof that you are not fit for the habit to be a monk, and you should just scuttle off and go to Alexandria and just give up the monastic life." The young man was just distraught, but realized, "Yeah, that's what I thought anyway, because I'm such an evil person for having these temptations to begin with." And he started walking to Alexandria, which was like the flesh pot of the early church. It's like going to, you know, the red light district in Amsterdam or Vegas or whatever. And on his way there, this young monk ran into an elderly monk who was returning from a journey to the monastery. And the older monk recognized, "Well, where are you going?" And the young monk explained the situation. Older one said, no, you come with me." Brought him back to the monastery, and together they prayed outside of the cell of the elderly monk. And the monk who is now with the young one said, "Oh God, Holy Spirit, please visit this stupid old monk," and basically prayed that the old monk would receive the temptations that the young monk had been struggling with. And all of a sudden, the elderly monk came running out of his cell, screaming, giving up his own vocation and heading off to Alexandria himself. The older monk stopped him and said, no, you don't need to give up your vocation. Maybe the devil never thought it was necessary to tempt you in this manner because you were so lukewarm in your faith to begin with. And so he just left you as it was. But the sign of the presence of temptation is a sign that God is allowing a soul to be tested because he knows that he can supply for you the grace to make these little temptations, these thorns, turn that into a crown for your own glory. And so when thoughts of affections come back, whether it's flashbacks of a previous physical relationship or pornographic images, addictions, like whatever comes to mind, instead of just trying to not think about it, "I'm not going to think about it, I'm not thinking about it," or wallow in shame or think the devil's got you now, I want you to stop and just do a prayer of thanksgiving to God for bringing you out of that lifestyle. So thank you, God. So it's like your first movement of your heart is up. Thank you, God. But then you can kind of turn down, like the sign of the cross kind of comes down and say, "But God, you know, again, I'm sorry for the way that I've lived." But then don't stay down there in shame. Come back up like the cross does. And then take this temptation as a moment of intercession. Go over and think about that person that's coming to mind. "And Lord, now I pray for her and the healing of her memories. And I pray for her conversion. And I pray for her future marriage and for her future husband." And now what you're doing is like it's kind of like a spiritual Tai Chi. That's a mixed martial art where you use your opponent's energy against them. And so here comes this temptation. Here comes this memory. Here comes this affection of sin that's in you. And you're going to stop, and you're not going to get scrupulous. You're not going to get into some cycle of shame and isolation. You're going to thank God for bringing you out of lifestyle and then say, "Hey, look, I'm sorry for doing that stuff, but God, now I'm going to pray a decade of the rosary for women." And if you are consistent in having the strategy towards that sin or that attachment to it, I think the devil will realize quickly it's quite counterproductive for him to present these thoughts to you, because every time he does, you just turn it into occasion of prayer. And so don't be disturbed. Don't lose your peace. Padre Pio once said, "Retain your peace, because the enemy always likes to fish in troubled waters." In other words, that when we lose our peace through shame or despair or discouragement or lust or anger, the devil sees the troubled waters of our soul, and that's where he wants to throw the bait in there. What false consolation can I draw that person into temptation with? So try to fight for your own peace. The thoughts come to mind. Don't lose your peace. Give that to God. Make a prayer of intercession. And the frequency of these temptations is no indication whatsoever of your spiritual progress. The measure of your spiritual progress is what you do when those temptations come, regardless of how often they come. So the saints have said, let the enemy rage, let him knock at the door, know and be at peace. He cannot enter the door except through your consent. And so be at peace, use this as an opportunity for prayer, and you'll be bringing grace into the life of those people in your past and retaining your peace in the process. So Anthony, does that help? Got any other follow-up questions on that?
No, that was absolutely perfect. No, thank you so much. That story was great. I needed to hear that, and that the actionable advice is, I'll definitely do that. Very easy to apply. Thank you.
Go dig up the episode on YouTube. Just type in my name, Jason Everett, and then Bishop Eric Varden, and the podcast is called Lust is Boring, because he tells the story way better than I do and just has a bunch of other great anecdotes he shares in there as well. So Bishop Eric Varden, he's even got a book on chastity. He's an awesome bishop.
Anthony, thanks. Thanks very much. There's three lines open right now, so if you want to talk with Jason Everett, 888-318-7884 is the number. I'm going to go back to the calls, but I do want you to know at the website JP2, that's the number 2, trails.com, JP2trails.com, you can find out about pilgrimages with Jason Everett. And if you're the sporting type, you can get out and do pilgrimages in nature, or at least that's part of the pilgrimages. He's got one for the canonization of Pier Giorgio coming up in Italy. Where else are you going? Are you going to France? Is that what you said?
This weekend we're going to Switzerland. We're doing a wilderness backpacking retreat. I mean, I guess people could sign up if they want, kind of late notice, but it's a wilderness backpacking retreat. The one to Italy is going to be more open to families, people of all ages. We're just going to do a little bit of hiking there. And then the one after that's going to be France to Lisieux. And then we're going to hike across the bay to Mount Saint-Michel on the Feast of St. Michael, and then take a hike also down to Salem, which is a monastery where they have a kind of the best Gregorian chant, from what I understand, in Europe. And we're going to live the monastic life for a couple of days of a silent retreat there. So most of the retreats are kind of geared towards Catholic young adult singles, because I really think the church has an obligation to create opportunities for them to meet each other. And so whether it's college students or single young adults, we can't just give them an app and an encyclical and tell them good luck. Like, we got to create opportunities, and that's what we're kind of trying to do through JP2 Trails.
Check it out, jp2trails.com. All right, we're going to Magdalene, living in North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Magdalene, welcome. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. So I was wondering, I'm someone that struggles a lot with sexual sin, but I'm very interested in dating and desire that deeply. And I was wondering at what point would be good to express to my significant other that I struggle with these, because obviously I don't want to like trauma dump or something like that at the very beginning, or if that maybe would be the best, I don't know.
Yeah, no, a couple of thoughts of resources that are out there. One, Kelsey Skok has a great book called Uncompromising Purity. It's not just a guy problem. So she's got a great ministry, and it's a great book, because there's so much unnecessary shame and stigma associated with women who battle temptations. I remember hearing one girl was saying, like, I don't even sin in a feminine way. And it's like, whoa, like, time out. Like, lust is not a guy problem. It's a human problem. And so a lot of times when a woman absorbs too much unnecessary shame in this area, it kind of sends her into this cycle of isolation. But what I like about Kelsey Skok's book is she really treats temptations from a different perspective than a guy might, of, well, here's one strategy and here's one weapon, where she's like, no, women, it's different. It might not be some pornographic pop-up ad. It could be just, I watched a movie and I just started having these romantic sentiments, and I started to envision this big idea, and then it turned into something sensual. Or hey, I didn't really put two and two together that at particular times in the month, my temptations might fluctuate in terms of how intense they are. And if I'm not understanding my own physiology, I might be unnecessarily difficult on myself in terms of I'm such a horrible person. It's like, no, the body has a rhythm. A woman needs to understand that as part of battling her own temptation. So Kelsey Skokes stuff is good. And then Magdala Ministries, Rachel Kalacki, if you could just type in Magdala Ministries, a lot of good stuff for women in terms of temptation. And so in terms of the question of the relationship, there's a question of timing and content in regards to, okay, when do I disclose it to this person and how much do I disclose to that person? And so if it's just in the budding stages of relationship and it's a battle that you've been fighting for a while, but your progress is tracking in a very positive manner. Like I used to just be messing up, you know, 5 times a week, and now it's like once every 2 to 4 weeks, and I've got a spiritual director. I'm doing the heavy lifting when it comes to any counseling that I might need, and I'm really tracking, making a lot of progress. If that's the case, I think, yeah, you're probably ready to look into a relationship. You're making progress. Whereas if this is a serious and profound addiction and there hasn't been a lot of progress, I would give you the advice I'd give to a guy that we need to discern, is this the right time for a relationship? Or do I need to make a little bit more progress in this area before discerning the sacrament of marriage in a romantic way with somebody? But when we come back from the breaks, I hear the music, I'll wrap up, give a couple little last points, and then we'll go on to the next caller. So when we get back from the commercial break, we'll finish this up.
All right, Magdalene, thanks very much. Couple lines open. If you'd like to talk with Jason Evert, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884.
Deepen your connection to the church's holy days and seasons while you draw on the wisdom of the church fathers. Feasts of Our Fathers, the new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, is a treasury of history, prayers, insights, and lessons that will bring you closer to the earliest of Catholic traditions. Take your prayer life and your solidarity with the church, past and present, to a new level. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers today at shop.catholic.com.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jason Evert is our guest. Chastity.com is his website. He's spent a long time now, lots of years. Maybe you don't like people to say that. It makes it make you sound very old, but lots of...
26 years.
26 years doing this. Yeah. And I think it would be fair to say your work and your life's effort is kind of part of a movement to recover what the Catholic Church had at one time. Wouldn't you say that it's kind of been a recovery operation?
Yeah, John Paul II said that the word chastity needs to be rehabilitated. Mm-hmm. And so I've kind of found that in his book, Love and Responsibility. I'm like, yeah, that's what I feel called to do. I feel like we got to take that word, which so many people just associate with this just, you know, frigid, prudish, repressive, Victorian idea about sexuality, and explain like, no, like, that's not it. Like, this is the virtue that frees you to love. This is the virtue that frees you to know if you're authentically being loved. And John Paul said chastity can only be thought of in association with the virtue of love. And if we don't make that connection in people's minds, it's just this litany of prohibitions. But it's really a beautiful inheritance that we've received of the church's teachings on human sexuality. I mean, it's the gospel. It's good mm-hmm. news. This yes. isn't just like, okay, here's the rules. I hate to break it to you, but yeah. it's like, no. This will help you to fall in love for the right reasons. John Paul II, we were recently given, which is really exciting. He wrote a meditation during the Year of the Family, 1994, called The Meditation on Givenness. And for whatever reason, nobody knows, he never published it. It was never printed. And so he passed away. And then in 2006, some people published it in Italian, but it remained unknown. And then in 2011, there's a theology journal called Communio that published it, but just online. And unless you're reading theology journals, you didn't know it existed. And so we discover this thing. I'm like, this is one of those beautiful things John Paul's ever written. I'm going to buy a bunch of them. And I get on Amazon, can't buy them. I'm like, it's not in print. I'm like, this is madness. And so I reached out to the theology journal. I said, hey, could we have permission to print this? And they're like, well, let me look into it. And they gave us permission to print a never-before meditation from John Paul II. And so we got the green light. We printed a couple thousand. They just flew out the door. So it's called The Meditation on Givenness. It's just a beautiful reflection on human love. And it's short. It's like 3,000 words. But in it, he has these lines in there, like where he's talking to the guy. And he basically says to the guys, you are the keeper of the holiness of her body. She is ever to remain an object of your respect. And if you view her with that purity of heart, he says that she will rejoice in you and she will be free to rejoice in the gift that her womanhood was created to be. Like, every line is so packed in there.
Yeah.
Where, isn't this what a guy wants? Dude, imagine if a woman could actually rejoice in the fact that I know how to look at her and she feels safe under the gaze of her brother, me. Like, she could rejoice in her own womanhood and feel safe instead of threatened. Like, he really gets to the core, the heart of what love is, instead of just, here's the rules and you got to follow them. So, you know, so this is it's a good lead in kind of back into the call we were taking there with Magdalene.
Yeah.
One thing, Magdalene, the resource that I pointed out to you is Magdala, and so not Magdalene, but Magdala Ministries, plural, .org. So MagdalaMinistries.org. It's a great website from Rachel Kalacki, where she just helps women who may be wrestling with this. So what I was leading into before the break there was that you want to be prudent in terms of when this information is disclosed to the guy, because obviously this is pretty personal stuff and you don't want every guy running around knowing this information about you. But if the relationship's getting serious and it could be tracking one day towards engagement, I do think that he would have a right to know that this has been a challenge, a struggle in your past, and what are you doing about it? You know, okay, yeah, this has been a struggle, but here's the progress that I've made, and here are the things that I'm putting in place. But you want to be careful that you're not disclosing too much detail, that he becomes like your spiritual leader or guru. That's the job of a good confessor. That's the job of a good spiritual director. So make sure you've got one of those. But, you know, he could help you in terms of accountability and struggle, but you don't want to be too detailed or too frequent in how often these conversations come up. If you're making progress and you've got the right things in place in terms of accountability software, filtering on the phones, a good spiritual director, a confessor you're going to consistently, you know, if you're tracking in a good direction, I think you could disclose some of this to him, but just make sure your spiritual director stays your spiritual director and the boyfriend does not become one.
Magdalene, thank you very much for the call. Jason Everett, our guest, 888-318-7884. Going now to Cincinnati, Ohio. Savannah is listening on the Catholic Answers app in Cincinnati. Savannah, welcome. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if a married couple can love for each other, and if so, what does that look like, and how do you know whether you're feeling lust or love for your spouse?
Well, it's a very, very good question. In the middle of Pope John Paul II's audiences, he was delivering on the theology of the body. He brought up the word of Christ where Jesus says, you know, you've heard it said that you shouldn't commit adultery, but I see if you even look at a woman with lust, you're committing adultery with her in your heart. And then he says in the audience that even husbands need to be careful not to do this. Now, when the press heard that, they had an absolute conniption fit. They lost it. They're like, what? We can't even desire our own wives. Great. Now you don't even need a mistress. You can just commit adultery with your own wife. Like, and the reaction that the media gave to the Pope really underscores their inability to distinguish passion or sexual desire from lust. And so what's the difference? The best definition I could think of lust is what Mikhail Wallerstein, this guy was the one who wrote the intro and translated the theology of the body. He said that what lust is the reduction of another human person to their sexual value. So everybody has sexual value, you do, I do, but that's not the most important value we have. Our personal value as a human being comes above that. And so if I experience a sexual urge towards a woman, whether it be my wife or some person in public, it's like, okay, I'm recognizing a value. Now, what do I do with that? Do I keep that first and foremost, and I use that person as an object for my enjoyment instead of doing what's best for that person? Or do I help rearrange kind of a hierarchy of those values in my heart of like, yes, I recognize that there is a great sexual value over there, but I'm not going to look at this woman like a collection of body parts. I'm not going to try to find some consolation in staring at the beauty that God created her. I need to respect her, even if the way she's dressing is kind of not inviting a lot of reverence, I'm still going to give it to her. So it's an act of the will. And so lust is an act of the will. It's not a feeling. It's not an urge. It's not a passion. You should feel passion for your spouse. You should anticipate and look forward to the marital act. There should be passion there. There should be intimacy, and you should be at peace in that. There's no need for, I think, an unnecessary scrupulosity. Like, oh, wait a minute, I'm really sexually attracted to my spouse. Did I just sin? No. John Paul II said the sexual urge is a gift of God. This is what John Paul II said. And so we need to be at peace that God takes delight in the fact that spouses delight in each other. There's a reason why he made the act so pleasurable and the body so beautiful to each other, because he wants spouses to be united, and God really likes kids. And so there's a reason behind the complementarity and the attraction that you experience. So I think it's important that you realize, okay, there's an attraction there, but when does it become lust? Well, let's say that a husband might want to be with his wife, and he knows she's totally stressed out, or he's just ignorant of the fact because he's not that connected to her, and she's just burnt out. She's been suffocated by kids all day long. She has a burning headache. It's 11 o'clock at night, but he thinks, well, yeah, but I got my needs as a man, and she needs to fulfill those needs. And he basically has no real concern for her, that he hasn't really showed love to her outside of the bedroom, and now he's expecting her to be open to him in the bedroom. John Paul points out in his book, Love and Responsibility, that this is the root of a lot of sexual frigidity in marriage, where the man's sexual needs are primary and sometimes solitary, where the woman's kind of go just on the back burner. And over time, that creates a lot of resentment and division between them from an act that should be uniting them. And so as a husband, if I see my wife and I find myself sexually attracted to her, that's a good thing. But now, what do I do with that attraction? Do I make sure that she's loved in other ways? And there's a context for that sexual desire. That context, what John Paul calls, is the culture of conjugal chastity. Think of it as a frame around a beautiful painting. So the beautiful painting is the sexual intimacy God's offering you, but we've got to frame it with reverence, that I'm not using her, I'm not, because I know of some marriages that broke up, and then the woman was cleaning the bedroom and she found pornography under their bed. And she's like, no wonder we had so many problems with intimacy. The very moment he's supposed to be making love to me, he's using my body to lust after these women in his imagination. The very moment he's supposed to be renewing his wedding vows in the flesh, he's committing adultery in his heart. This would be lust inside of marriage. So it can be towards your spouse. It could be in your imagination towards somebody else, but it is an act of the will, not to be confused with sexual passion itself, which should be present in that marital union. So does that help? Are there any follow-up questions you have to make sure that you've got clarity there?
Yeah, I think you answered all my questions perfectly.
Okay.
Wow, yeah, perfectly. That's a pretty high score.
if your hearts are in the right place, you're praying together, you love each other, be at peace and enjoy the gift that God gave you. And the Song of Songs is erotic love poetry smacked in the middle of the Bible. Thomas Aquinas, like the angelic doctor of the church, on his deathbed, asked what book to be read to him by the monks? The Song of Songs. And so God does not have a problem with sexual passion. He put it in the Bible, and it was not the devil's invention. It was his. All the devil can do is try to hijack it, manipulate it, and divide spouses by misusing it. But no, it's a great gift. God wants you to delight in each other, and he delights in that.
Savannah, thank you so much. That brings us right to the break. Right back with more on Chastity with Jason Everett on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1996. EWTN acquires a Catholic Resource Network, a Catholic online service with the largest collection of Catholic documents on the web to expand EWTN's media apostolate.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Jason Everett is our guest. Check out his website, chastity.com. Unbelievable resources available there. But also, if you're thinking of making a pilgrimage, you might check out JP2, that's the number 2, trails.com, JP2trails.com, and check out the various pilgrimages you can do with Jason. We're going now to Marie in Rhode Island, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Marie, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, I was calling. I'm concerned over, I'm a grandmother of four girls, aged 16 to 21, and concerned over one of them who has, they're all girls, has a girlfriend, and I just struggle with how to talk to her and give her information. She knows that, for instance, I usually send the girls different, you know, things from social media that say, this is how you, someone should treat you, and many Catholic things. And one day I did send it to her about how you want, you know, maybe a future husband to treat you. And she responded to me saying, you do know that I'm gay. And I said, no, you think you're gay, because I truly believe that the pressures of the culture and the way public schools are in the world is that it's okay to be gay. And it's okay to experiment, but in my heart of hearts, I know that she's not, and she knows I don't think it's okay, but I'm her grandmother, so I, you know, with peer pressure and all of that, I don't know. She is respectful of me, but I just want more or some information to give her in a way that she can relate to.
Yeah. No. Thank you for loving her, because I know that you do. A couple of thoughts I think that may be helpful. I wouldn't recommend going down the route of like, you're not gay. Yes, I am. No, you're not. Yes, I am. Because in her eyes, if she experiences any type of same-sex attractions, that now becomes her identity. Like, gay is the word for what I feel. And so what we want to do is not invalidate the fact that those feelings are present. She might experience attractions for other girls. So what do we do about that? Step number one you can do is point out that, like, man, you ever, like, everything in the world seems to be sexualized. I mean, look, you know, there's a chewing gum commercial, sex. There's a car, sex. There's a roofing company. I mean, there's I saw a pickup truck drive by recently. It was like sexy roofing. I'm like, really? I mean, that's a big stretch, you know, tiles and like, no, that's not what that word is for. But, like, everything is sexualized. And any young person is going to realize, yeah. I mean, I was at Home Depot and there's a magazine, How to Build Sexy Shutters for Your House. It's like, oh, enough, okay? And so everything's being sexualized. Products are being sexualized. But what's also being sexualized is identity. That if anyone defines their identity by who they're sexually attracted to, life would be confusing really fast. Because what if I see a woman who's not my wife and I think she's attractive? Is that my identity now? Am I an adulterosexual? If I see a pornographic billboard and she's pretty, like, oh my gosh, am I a pornosexual now? And so this is what's happened, is that we're defining the human person by who they're sexually attracted to, but that's not the Catholic Church's teachings. The church would not talk about there being gay people, lesbian people, trans people, you know, non-binary people. The church would say, no, there are people made in the image and likeness of God who experience same-sex attractions or transgender inclinations. We're putting the person first, and the attraction is a subset under that, instead of making their attractions their very identity. Because if your identity is your attractions, then your very personhood will be stifled if you can't act upon those attractions. So products are being sexualized, so agree with it. Our identities are being over-sexualized too, but a real key we want to get across is that attractions are being over-sexualized. All over the world, students are coming to me, and a girl will say something like this. She's like, Jason, I think I'm straight, my friends think I'm a lesbian, so I'm concluding that I'm bi, and I'm trying to figure it out. And I'll be like, what's going on? And she'll say, well, the boys in my school are really perverted and immature and gross. But there's a girl on my campus. I come alive with her when I'm around her. She's beautiful and funny and smart. My friends are telling me it's a girl crush and we should experiment. And I don't know what to do. And I said, look, I don't know if no one's just not told you this before, that you're supposed to be repulsed by everything repulsive. You're supposed to be attracted to everything attractive. So your friend here, her wit, her charm, her beauty, doesn't that draw you to her? She said, it does. I said, well, look, I go to a Bible study. There's an 85-year-old man in our class with a gigantic beard, and I'm completely attracted to that guy. I mean, his sense of humor, his joy, his wisdom. I just want to be around the guy. Because guess what? Not every human attraction is a sexual attraction. And I'm telling you, this girl's eyes lit up. She's like, I've never thought about it like that before. That makes so much sense. Now, it isn't always that cut and dry. Some people do experience sexual attractions to members of the same sex. So how does chastity apply to them? Well, I think for young girls, it's so important to point out that because you feel drawn to another girl, you experience a connection with her, doesn't mean that that is your identity as a lesbian. I was at a junior high in Dallas, and like six girls came up to me, seventh grade girls, all identifying as lesbian. And I started talking to the girls, and they were not like erotically attracted to the eighth grade girls. They just thought the eighth grade boys were disgusting, which of course we know they are. And so instead of shaming these girls, I said, you know what? I'm glad you're not attracted to those kinds of boys. I'd be more worried about you if you did find those kinds of boys attractive. But let me just guess what you're after is a relationship where you're safe from objectification. You can connect with somebody on an emotionally profound way, and shocker, you're not finding it amongst adolescent males today. This doesn't become your identity. We're replacing this whole story with just a label of lesbian. And so these are things that I try to bring up gently in conversations to them. One student came up to me the other day and they're like, are you straight? And I said, no, I'm Jason. And they're like, what? And it just kind of froze them up for a minute. And I tried to explain, no. If I'm a book, my sexual attractions aren't the cover, okay? It's on page 57 in the book. It's like chapter 4. It's not my identity as straight. Like when I did the talk at your high school, they didn't say our speaker today is Jason and he's straight. That's not my identity. Yeah, I'm exclusively attracted to females, but that's not the front of my business card. And as soon as we make our sexual attractions the billboard in front of our face, there's so much more to the story than that. So those are some things I try to, and just love her to death. I mean, go shopping with her, send her Christmas cards, perplex her with your love, because she'll be so convinced that if anyone doesn't endorse her identity as a 15-year-old lesbian or whatever that they hate her. But then she'll scratch her head, but I know grandma loves me, but she doesn't buy off on this stuff. You want to perplex her with your love. In terms of resources, there's two things I recommend. One, there's a ministry called Desert Stream, and it's, I think their website, I pulled it up on my phone during the break, desertstream.org. Marco Casanova, there's lots of really good resources they've got there. So Desert Stream has a lot of resources for Catholics who experience same-sex attractions and realize that gay pride and gay shame are not the only options on the table. Chastity is another option here. And so desertstream.org. And then the ministry of Kim Zember, Z-E-M-B-E-R. She's been on lots of different radio shows. She's doing talks. As a woman who's Christian, who experiences same-sex attractions, who talks about how she's pursuing chastity and how profound healing is possible. So Kim Zember and then the work of Desert Stream are two really good resources. And if you want to find more, we've got a website, chastity.com. And if you do chastity.com/SSA for same-sex attraction, there's a lot of good resources there. But just keep loving on her and try to gently unhinge this idea that her sexual attractions are her identity, because then they become her destiny. No, there's something she experiences, and you're not going to argue with the fact that she experiences them. You're just kind of gently pointing out, because that just because you feel extremely drawn to another adolescent female and perhaps not to adolescent males is not an indication that's her, that that's her identity or her destiny.
Right. Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marie. You're welcome. Thank you very much. Let's see how many we can get on here with Jason Everett. Let's go to Kentucky, where Thomas is watching on YouTube. Thomas, welcome. You got a question for Jason Everett?
Yes. I'll try to get this as quick as possible because I realize other callers are on there. I just want to know, like, how do you get images burnt out of your mind? I know it's probably an impossible answer, but how do you get images burnt out of your mind once you get them, virtually or physical?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, no, good question. I mean, in a sense, God designed these images in a way to be burned into our imagination because, according to his plan, that would be our wife and her alone. And it was like he gave us this blank canvas of an imagination for this image to be branded upon it of the sexual beauty of our spouses. But then, like me, like I grew up, pornography is all over the place. Your buddies had it, your friends had it. So long before I got married at the age of 27, I had already polluted my brain with all of this garbage. And thanks be to God, I got rid of it when I was 18 years old or so. But the scar tissue remains. Flashbacks can come up when you least expect them. I was like, wait a minute. I'm not even trying to look for this stuff. I'm trying to like walk forward in the communion line at church. And this memory is coming back from like 8 years ago. We'd kind of discussed this with a call earlier in the show. Don't lose your peace. If a specific memory comes to mind of an actual person, a fantasy, a pornographic image, whatever, and it's there, don't sit there and do, I'm not going to think about it. I remember meeting a high school boy 20 years ago, and he's like, yeah, whenever I have a tempting thought, I try to think about Ross Perot instead. Now, Ross Perot is an elderly politician, like late 1990s, and you know, not remarkably attractive. And I'm like, hey, you know, whatever works. But I don't necessarily recommend that technique because it's almost like you're saying no to that person. Like, no, you came to mind, and the answer is no. Yes, we have to renounce sin and avoid its occasion, but the answer to the human body is yes. Like, how do I respond to your body in love? And the image of your body is in my mind, and I want to respond in love. How do I do that? Okay, well, one, I'm going to pray a decade of the rosary for you right now. Friday's coming up, and I'm going to offer my fast on Friday for you. And so whenever a thought comes to mind, start praying for that person. Like, where is she right now? I wonder if she's gotten out of the industry. You know, I wonder if she's still an alcoholic. I wonder if she's, you know, broken free and trying to start her life. Or maybe she was in that type of industry because she was a single mom and needed to make ends meet. And she got online and found she could make money there. Like, the reason the porn industry exists is because it shows so little of the woman. If you actually zoomed out beyond her body to her life, her childhood, her current circumstances, the trauma she's experienced, and you saw the whole woman, I mean, I've had women tell me who are in the porn industry that they left the industry after their like third or fourth abortion. Like, how much delight could a man take in looking at those images if he knew a human life was being conceived in that scene who would later die in an abortion clinic, you know, 3 weeks later. Like, you would take no delight in the entire thing if you zoomed out and saw the full circumstance. And so what we've got to do is not block the thought of the woman out of our head, but bring her front and center and be like, you are my sister in humanity, and I will clothe you with dignity. I will clothe you with my prayers. It's a spiritual work of mercy. And so you're loving these women because God knows that you have a desire for unity with her. But what if the answer to that desire for unity is actually yes? That God wants you to be united to her in perfect love for all eternity as you stand before the beatific vision of God and all the glory of your glorified bodies together for all eternity. And then she sees the prayers you offered for her in this life that helped trigger her to experience life everlasting. And so when the temptations come, don't beat yourself up. Pray hard for this woman, and then you're righting the wrong with love instead of lust.
What a beautiful question, Thomas. Thank you so much for that, and what a beautiful answer. That's why so many of us just think so highly and are so grateful to God for Jason Evert and his ministry. If you want to find out more about his ministry, you can go to chastity.com. Also, he's all over the internet. Just put in Jason Evert, you'll come to materials. If you want to do a pilgrimage with him, go to jp2trails.com. Jason Evert, God bless you. It's always great to have you on.
Thanks for having me on. God bless you guys.
That'll do it for us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.